imperial leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, now one of the vital men, key men in the British cabinet, has journeyed to Scotland to make an important speech on British and German naval programs. Just as he arrives in Scotland, he reads the Kaiser's speech, which has sounded a note of belligerency. Churchill knows just what words he must speak now to answer this veiled threat. To a great audience, he rises to speak. Before him in the audience, listening to his every word, is his wife Clementine, his closest friend and collaborator.
The purpose of British naval power are essentially defensive. We have no thoughts, and we have never had any thoughts of aggression, and we attribute no such thoughts to other great powers. There is, however, this difference between the British naval power and the naval power of the great and friendly empire, and I trust it may long remain the great and friendly empire, of Germany. The British Navy is to us a necessity, and from some point of view, the German Navy is to them more in the nature of a luxury. It is existence to us. It is expansion for them. We have great reserves of seamen in this country. There are measures which may be taken to make a greater use of our reserves than has hitherto been found possible. And I have given directions for that part of the subject to be carefully studied by the naval experts upon whom I rely. Our reserves, both from the Royal Navy and from the Mercantile Marine, are a great resource. And this island has never been, and will never be, lacking in trained and hardy mariners bred from their boyhood up to the service of the sea. Whatever may happen abroad, there will be no whining here. No signals of distress will be hoisted. No cries for help or succor will go up. We will face the future as our ancestors would have faced it, without disquiet, without arrogance, but in solid and inflexible determination.
Magnificently, every word clear. The audience were most enthusiastic. They seemed to be thrilled by every sentence you uttered.
Thank you, my dear. We shall now see what Germany thinks of it. They'll be waiting very anxiously to know how we feel about their naval expansion program. I have no doubt that my speech will warn them that peace is the only foundation for our future negotiations. Oh, well, we must now think of returning to London. I've had enough of this weather for a long time. Any news?
Congratulations, Churchill. Your Glasgow speech was magnificent.
Did they give it much publicity in Berlin?
Yes, and the Germans were very much offended. What hurt them most was your reference to their navy as a luxury fleet. But it's perfectly true, just the same.
But what of the new navy law?
Oh, they mean business, I'm afraid. The new law provides for practically 4/5 of the German navy to be placed permanently on a war footing.
Yeah, that means that for the future we must be prepared at all times for war. Oh, if I only had more time to give the Navy a widely extended outlook on war problems. We have many captains of ships, but few captains of war.
How long would you like?
I'd like at least 15 years.
15 years? Good God, man, I doubt if we shall have much more than 15 months.
No. A year or two is a crisis. We must prepare only in strength immediately. it's very good to see you again, Herr Balin. You're looking concerned.
Are you well? I am a very disappointed man, Mr. Churchill. Very disappointed, if I may say so. Your Glasgow speech has changed all my plans.
I'm sorry, but the Kaiser also made a speech.
You know, mein Herr, that I, as a patriotic German, a not uninfluential businessman, have been working for a long time with your Sir Ernst Castle to endeavor to compose the differences between our two countries.
And I've appreciated your work. Castle knows my mind, and Castle, too, knows the minds of the German leaders today. Although he's a patriotic Englishman, he is German by birth, and by this means has a very clear insight into both our viewpoints.
I asked Sir Ernst to write to the Chancellor, suggesting that you be invited to meet von Terpitz. I believe Sir Ernst wrote, saying that your friendly sentiments towards Germany are obvious, as is also your admiration for the German people.
And the reply?
There has been no reply yet. Now that you have spoken thus, it seems almost impossible that our reconciliation should be effected.
I am indeed sorry. I look upon the estrangement between our two countries as senseless. But we cannot bow our heads when Germany threatens.
It is sad. If war should ever come between your country and mine, it would be a tragedy from which I would never recover.
There are many such as you, Herr Balin, and many such as Sir Ernest Castle. It is sad. It is also sad that millions of young men in Germany and in Britain should face an unknown destiny. Because why? Because ambition is a deadly master. Remember only this, Herr Balin. Britain wants nothing. Nothing save peace. Peace with honor.
What a pity the fog is so heavy, Mr. Churchill. I cannot see this wonderful navy I've heard so much about.
Don't be impatient, my friend. The fog may lift at any time now.
Now I've looked forward so long to the great naval review at Portland. Now I see nothing.
You'll see all you want very shortly.
You are not afraid that we will see too much, we foreign observers?
You've been invited to attend this naval review for that very purpose. To see too much.
You think that the might of the British Navy will discourage other nations from making war. But you forget, Mr. Churchill, that those other nations may have mighty fleets also, even if they do not advertise them so much, don't you?
The fog's lifting. Look.
A battleship.
A battleship? Look further, my friend. See, the fog is lifting quickly.
The whole line of battleships. The curtain has lifted, and what do I see? A line of steel suddenly thrust before my eyes. It is almost magical.
You've seen as yet only a very small part of the Royal Navy. Watch closely.
They seem to be everywhere. Great monsters stealing out of the fog in an endless procession. There, as the fog lifts, another line. Why? The bay is full of ships.
Three battle squadrons abreast with cruisers and flotillas disposed ahead in the storm. They're making straight for land at a steady 20 knots. Now watch.
Amazing. Magnificent. The greatest armada the world has ever known. But won't they have to slacken speed? Is there no danger of them running aground?
Watch the Admiral's flagship. We'll see the signal. There it is.
Unbelievable. Every anchor falls together. Every propeller whirls astern. Every ship becomes stationary.
Look along the lines. Miles this way and miles that.
They might have been drawn by a ruler. I rub my eyes. I ask myself if this is really possible.
Now you know why we ask foreign observers to be present at our review. Tell me, my friend, if you represented a great power and your government decided to go to war against Britain, what would you say?
I would say, enough of this madness. No matter how mighty your army, remember you fight against an island kingdom which is ringed about by the greatest company of ships ever assembled by a single nation since the world began. Britain is invincible.
for she is guarded by the sea.
The sea, which is the wall of England, and the mariner's bread in her service. Mind. Thoughts of grandeur and of greatness, of history, seared history. Ships, the fleet of an empire, yes, an empire. For consider these ships, so vast in themselves, yet so small, so easily lost to sight on the surface of the waters. On them float the might, majesty, dominion, and power of the British Empire. All our long history built up century after century, all our great affairs in every part of the globe, all the means of livelihood and safety of our faithful, industrious, active population depend on them. Open the seacocks and let them sink beneath the surface. And in a few minutes, half an hour at the most, the whole outlook of the world would be changed. The British Empire would dissolve like a dream. Each isolated community struggling forward by itself. The central power of union broken. Mighty provinces, empires in themselves, drifting helplessly out of control and falling a prey to strangers. Europe, after one sudden convulsion, passing into the iron grip and rule of the Teuton. And of all that the Teutonic system meant. Guard them well, admirals and captains, hardy tars and tall marines. Guard them well and guide them through.
Churchill, our incomparable adventurer, our great statesman, who is now to play one of the vital roles of his career.